The humid air of a June night in Houston usually carries the sound of distant traffic and the rhythmic hum of cicadas. But on this particular evening, the atmosphere in the Third Ward was punctured by something far more permanent. I remember standing at the edge of the police tape, watching the red and blue lights paint the brickwork of the local storefronts in a frantic strobe-like pattern that felt entirely at odds with the stillness of the man lying on the pavement. People had already begun to gather behind the perimeter, their faces a mixture of disbelief and a weary kind of grief that comes when a neighborhood loses one of its most recognizable anchors. The scene was chaotic in that specific way, a crime scene is, before the forensics team fully takes control. With shell casings marked by yellow plastic cones and the muffled crackle of dispatch radios providing the only soundtrack, it was a stark, clinical end for a man who had spent his life navigating the complexities of these very streets, attempting to build something more durable than the violence that eventually found him. I looked down at my notepad, noting the time and the position of the body, knowing that the ripples from this single event would extend far beyond the yellow tape and into the heart of a city already struggling with its identity. The victim, a man whose name was synonymous with local resilience and a shared history with some of the city's most famous figures, was officially identified as Milton Powell, known to everyone here as Big Pokey. The investigation began with a meticulous reconstruction of the hours leading up to the first 911 call, a process that required me to move through the neighborhood and speak with those who had seen Powell in his final afternoon. He had been a presence in the community for decades, a man who had transitioned from the hardships of his youth into a role that many described as a mentor or a steady hand for the younger generation. As I reviewed the witness statements, a chronological map of his day started to emerge, showing a man who was moving through his routine with no apparent sense of the threat that was trailing him. He had spent time at a local community hub, a place where he often held court to discuss music, business, and the ongoing efforts to revitalize the area after the national spotlight of previous years had faded. Those who spoke to him that day described him as being in high spirits, focused on future projects, and expressing a sense of duty toward the people he worked alongside. There was no indication in these early interviews of a brewing conflict or a specific vendetta that would explain the sudden escalation of violence that occurred later that evening. My task was to look past the public persona and find the friction points, searching for any recorded interaction or overheard argument that might have served as a catalyst. I spent hours inside the precinct, going over the history of the location where the shooting took place, looking for patterns of criminal activity that might suggest a random encounter rather than a targeted hit. The lead-up to the crime appeared deceptively normal, which is often the most challenging type of case to solve because it offers no obvious point of departure from the everyday. I had to consider every person who crossed his path, every phone call he received, and every stop he made while navigating the grid of the city. The digital and forensic evidence eventually provided the clarity that the initial witness statements lacked, shifting the focus of the investigation from theory to hard data. I spent several days analyzing the surveillance footage recovered from three different businesses surrounding the intersection, watching the graininess of the night vision cameras for any sign of a trailing vehicle or a suspicious figure. It was in the frame-by-frame analysis of a camera mounted above a convenience store that I finally saw the movement that changed the trajectory of the case. A dark-colored sedan had been circling the block for approximately 20 minutes before Powell arrived, maintaining a distance that suggested a coordinated effort to wait for the right moment. The forensic team processed the vehicle's path through the city's automated license plate readers, allowing us to track the car's movement from the suburban outskirts directly into the heart of the Third Ward. Inside the lab, the ballistics report confirmed that the shell casings found at the scene were matched to a single 9mm handgun, suggesting a lone shooter who had acted with a high degree of precision. I also spent a significant amount of time reviewing the digital footprint left behind on Powell's mobile devices, looking for any encrypted messages or social media interactions that might point to a setup. The metadata from his last few calls showed a series of brief exchanges with business associates, none of which flagged as high risk, until I found a deleted message thread from an unrecognized number. This specific thread contained a request for a meeting at the exact location where the shooting occurred, framed as a discussion regarding a new community initiative. The technical detail of the cell tower pings allowed me to place the suspect's phone in the immediate vicinity of the crime scene at the precise moment the shots were fired. This forensic anchor provided the necessary leverage to move forward with a primary person of interest, moving the investigation from a broad search into a narrow, evidence-driven pursuit. The legal proceedings that followed the arrest were a slow and calculated march toward a resolution that many in the community felt was long overdue. I sat in the back of the courtroom as the prosecution laid out the timeline I had helped construct, using the surveillance maps and the ballistics data to paint a picture of a premeditated act rather than a spontaneous outburst of street violence. The defendant sat stoically while the evidence was presented, his defense team attempting to cast doubt on the reliability of the cell tower data and the clarity of the video footage. However, the weight of the forensic evidence proved to be insurmountable, as the specific movement patterns of the vehicle and the recovered weapon created a direct link that could not be easily explained away. When the jury returned with a guilty verdict, there was a heavy silence in the room, a realization that while justice was being served, the loss to the community remained an open wound. The sentencing phase saw the judge deliver a maximum term, citing the calculated nature of the crime and the impact Powell had on the social fabric of Houston as aggravating factors. The finality of the court's decision brought a formal end to the investigation, but the broader conversation about the cycle of violence in these neighborhoods continued to echo long after the gavel fell. I filed my final reports and closed the case file, noting the official records of the incarceration and the subsequent appeals, which were all eventually denied. The paperwork reflects a completed investigation and a successful prosecution, leaving the facts to stand as the only remaining narrative of that night in June. The case of Milton Powell was officially resolved in the eyes of the law, with the perpetrator beginning a life sentence and the evidence being moved into permanent storage at the county archives. There were no further leads to pursue and no remaining questions regarding the logistics of the event, marking the conclusion of my involvement in the matter.